Welcome to another edition of the Albinism Report with myself, Shayla. The Albinism Report is brought to you by Channel Africa, giving you the African perspective. Channel Africa can be tuned into via DSTV's 802 on the audio bouquet, alternatively www.channelafrica.co.za. We keep the conversation going, so please do find us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is the Albinism Report. International Albinism Awareness Day was on the 13th of June 2022, but here on the Albinism Report, we look to further the conversation around albinism awareness at large. And today we are joined by three young, brave, and thriving individuals who will be helping us further the conversation, the likes of Abongile Tlantini, who is an albinism awareness advocate and the founder of Holding Albus. We're also joined by Marvelyn Green, who is also an albinism awareness advocate from the UK and is of Caribbean descent. And she's also the founder of Yell for Change. Lastly, we're going to be joined by Thokozani Sibiya, who is a member of the Albinism People with Vision, as well as an administrator by profession. He's also celebrating Pride Month as an openly gay man. Looking forward to the conversation. Hopefully you are too. Find us on social media. On Twitter, it is at Channel Africa 1. And my personal handle, MS_NDIKUMANA. Welcome to it. If you've just joined us, 802 on DSTV's audio bouquet, alternatively www.channelafrica.co.za. As promised, we have three lovely individuals joining us, and we're here to chat all things Albinism Day. But I know that we're extending this, and each of you have shared your sentiments about Albinism Day being something more than a day. It's actually a month. I want to rope in Thokozani, please. Give me an elaborate understanding of that.
Well, albinism awareness is an ongoing experience. I think as Africans and as global citizens, we're getting into that. We're getting into understanding ourselves. And we're getting to understanding our role in society. And we're starting to see it manifest. There are so many people who are out there now who are helping us celebrate albinism, whether it is in the entertainment industry, whether it is in the legal field. There's so much, but it's still so little, and we have so much to do. And that is what this Awareness Day is going to be for us. It's going to be a day for us to let each other know that we are capable of getting into these industries, changing them, influencing them in some way. And that's what I'm looking forward to when it comes to International Albinism Awareness Day. I think it's going to be something huge as the time goes by.
Sure. Absolutely appreciate that, Thokozani. Now, I know that you are a member of Albinism People with Vision. Talk to me about what happened on the 13th, particularly on Albinism Awareness Day.
Okay, well, APWV, or should I say Albinism People with Vision, is an NPO that has just been initiated. It's very new around the East Rand. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to have an organization that represents people living with albinism by people with albinism. So we've had problems in the past with regards to having organizations that represent people with albinism in the East Rand, but not really having someone in the structures that has albinism. And that has led to many taking advantage of donations and subscriptions and certain help that could be very beneficial for people living with albinism. So on the 13th, I asked the members to send me a couple of pictures. At the moment, our drive is to create awareness about albinism in our spaces, We initiated a Facebook group, which we hope to grow as time goes by. We are busy also strengthening our structures, our finances, so that we can go out there, make changes, make this life thing more bearable for people living with albinism. I think we've been discriminated for way too long. That's basically what we are busy with now. But other than that, we give each other love and motivation, and we're there for each other. We're a family, and we're hoping to grow it, and we grow it slowly. When you meet someone, you take their number, you take their contacts, and then we add them, and then we welcome them, all of us. And it's a beautiful experience. I'm just loving it. I'm having fun.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing with us, Thokozani. I want to rope in Marvelyn, a woman with Caribbean descent. How exotic. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good afternoon, Africa. How are you doing? It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and I understand that you are based in the UK. So talk to me about what International Albinism Awareness Day looked like on your end of the world.
Well, I live in the UK, and it's very rare that albinism is visualized, because where I'm from, I'm of Caribbean descent. I am of a Jamaican mother and a British father. I was born in Jamaica, but I was raised in the UK. Albinism awareness, it's very rare. It's a rare condition in the UK. You know, it's one in 17,000 in the UK. Having not said that, I grew up in two countries. So living in the Caribbean myself, I was surrounded with a few PWAs myself. But in the UK, I just think that most people who are born with this condition, they don't really step out the boat to really bring the condition to the visibility aspects, because of the stigma and because of discriminations that majority would face. So I don't really see a lot in the UK, and furthermore, UK is very diverse, so you don't really see many PWAs, because most people here are white, so you can't really tell if a person has albinism or not in the UK.
Absolutely appreciate that response. Now, I know that you are the founder of Yell for Change, which looks to spread awareness on albinism across your region. Talk to me about how that is adding progress to the conversation around albinism in the UK.
With that said, how it started was with friends and family, and I was to get them to wear pictures of them in yellow. So it was just like a WhatsApp thing I did, and then I spread it to social media. So it became not just a national, but it became a international advocacy for me. It was using social media to get persons with albinism to wear yellow, to bring the light, to represent our advocacy in yellow, because obviously albinism is beautiful, and to live in this golden skin, I wanted to empower albinism, I wanted to encourage albinism, and to really spread the awareness through the yellow message on social media.
Wow. And speaking about advocacy, we have an advocate of note, Abungile Kwantini, who is joining us. How are you doing?
I am great. I'm really excited to hear, you know, Marvelyn and Thokozani talk about IAD. It's been quite an experience this week. You know, it happened on Monday, the 13th of June, but some of us, we're still celebrating.
Yes.
We celebrated in May.
Yes.
For IAD in June, so it's been quite an experience. It's been lovely. It's been rejuvenating. You know, there's been an electricity in the air, and on WhatsApp groups and on the media. It just, although we are all so far apart, we're so connected. So it's been a great time. It's been a great week.
Absolutely love that. Now, talk to me about holding ABNIS or rather Albus, sorry. Yes. Talk to me about how your organization or your company particularly adds to the conversation around the advocacy and albinism.
So Holding Albus started as in 2011 as just a discussion in high school. I went to a private school in the Val, and there was on Hendley and Clip, and there was another school of for persons with albinism in the school. It was a specialized school for kids with albinism and other impairments. And so I discovered this, and one of my teachers said, you know, maybe you should go to the school and like talk to the kids. So I did, and it was such a refreshing thing. The school is Sibonile Secondary School. And then, you know, then I went to varsity, but I never really stopped my advocacy. I opened a Facebook page, and even on my page, I would basically tell people the things that they didn't know about albinism. So my idea was to mainstream albinism. I'm not one who lives in boxes. I'm not one who believes in boxes, particularly because when you have albinism, you more than just you're black or Indian, or you were black with the white skin, or Indian with the white skin, or Chinese with the white skin. So there's quite a lot of intersectionality. And I wanted to mainstream what we do, you know, what organizations we do, our achievements. So I would feature that on the Facebook page. And then it just, and then my activism took a life of its own. It then started moving into the human rights space and really trying to humanize. For me, moving into the human rights space was humanizing persons with albinism, you know, because a lot of the discrimination is around dehumanizing us, not seeing us as people, seeing us less than, not understanding our identity, taking our identity away, making an identity for us. So for me, it was really about humanizing albinism. So it became what I seek to do in the work that I, as an individual, would do as an activist. So it then took me to becoming a consultant. So when I consult, it's usually around issues for mainstreaming persons with impairments and disabilities, issues that are aligned with albinism and mainstreaming those issues.
Wow. And I know that you had recently or have recently done some work with a UN independent expert on albinism, Miss Mululuka and MT Drummond. Talk to me about that.
Oh, that was lovely. So I need to be careful what I say because some of the stuff is confidential.
Okay.
So she started last year in August I know the world has a lot to say about the, you know, she doesn't have albinism, but she really takes issues of albinism very close to the heart. She is really looking to bring other topics that haven't been talked about a lot in Africa. So, for example, one of them is migration and persons with albinism on the move. So she's put out a call and asked for persons with albinism who have traveled from one place to another. So Marvelyn, you would have been a great candidate, and I know I put it up on the group that we both share and you didn't respond, so ha, throwing shade.
Love to see it.
Throwing shade, but it was about hearing about people's experiences. You know, we talk about persons with albinism moving from one place to another due to threats on their lives, but some of us move because we want to travel, some of us are moving because we're seeking something, and it's about owning that story, really. And what we wanted to say is we want to put out to the world, talk about the plights that we're facing, but also the many reasons that we migrate, but also how we connect in the world. Do we seek each other out in places that we're going to move to? Are there certain things that we request from organizations that work with persons with albinism? Do we even try to find each other, and what resources do we need? So it was that experience that I had, and it was quite a powerful experience because you realize that there are so many parts in the world that are moving in the space of albinism. There is the Global Albinism Awareness Alliance, which is based more in Europe, with European organizations, and they are very nationalistic. So there's one in France, and that focuses on French persons with albinism, and then there's one in Netherlands, Denmark, very much focused on their populations. And then there's the African Albinism Network, which is more around African countries. But what I've seen, just as we were talking about celebrating albinism, is in Africa, we celebrate through internationally, you know, through different countries. One person may be from Tanzania, another one from Cameroon, but we are all sharing at the same time. So for us, when we celebrate albinism in Africa, it's almost like we're celebrating without borders, you know? So it's been quite an empowering experience. A friend of mine, Setumbuli, will be joining Muluka to support her in the office. So we're looking forward to great things that are going to be coming from that office with Setu, you know, giving us a voice, and Muluka championing that.
Let's take a break and we'll be right back.
My name is Senator Dr. Isaac Mwaura, the first Member of Parliament and Senator with Albinism and Chairman of the Albinism Society of Kenya. You are listening to the Albinism Report on Channel Africa from an African perspective. Enjoy.
My name is Jane Waidera, Programs Director, Positive Exposure Kenya. I'm also the co-creator, Claim for Albinism. You're listening to the Albinism Report on Channel Africa from an African perspective.
802 is the platform on DSTV's audio bouquet. Alternatively, you could be streaming us via www.channelafrica.co.za. We're here to further the conversation on albinism awareness at large, and joining us are advocates and founders of their own establishments, the likes of Abongile Kwantini, who is the founder of Holding Albus. We have the likes of Marvelyn Green, who is the founder of Yell for Change. And lastly, we have Togazani Sibiya, who is a member of Albinism People with Vision. I think we can officially declare that June is International Albinism Awareness Month, but it's not just the month of albinism. I know that it is also Pride Month, and I sort of want to rope in Togazani into the conversation, just to have a conversation on that. So Togazani, you're part of the LGBTQI community, but you're also a person with albinism. What are some of the challenges that you have to personally undergo on the daily?
Well, firstly, it's your halo effect, you know. I'm gay, openly so, and every space that I have been to, my gayness has come out. You know, it has come to show. My albinism has popped out, and I had a choice growing up whether am I going to allow society to learn things by themselves, or am I going to change the script and try and facilitate educating my friends and my family and everybody around me around the challenges that we face as people living with albinism and being also the members of the LGBTQ plus. And that means that meant for me that I had to understand a lot. I had to delve into the LGBTQ community individually and understand every part of it so that I know how it affects me as a gay person. And then I had to go back to my communities. I had to go back home and start educating my family about what it means for me being gay and also living with albinism. I had to find organizations around me that would teach me more about myself as a gay person growing up in a township, for example. And it was a lot. It was challenging. It was emotionally draining. There were times when I thought it was too much for me. There were times when I felt like, you know what, why not take an early exit? I'm very lucky that in all that I had to learn, I had a very good support system. It's not financial, but I had people behind me saying that you can do this. Don't let this and that define you. You have the best definition of yourself. I had people that are saying that, you know what, everywhere you're going to go, people are going to see your albinism, and they're going to treat you or react to you according to what they see visually. But what you can do is learn ways in how you as a person living with albinism can introduce them, maybe break the ice for them so that they can learn instead of prejudice. Because it's very easy to prejudice when you're in those environments and you are facing those two particular subjects together. But I think I learned a lot over the years. I've been lucky to meet people that want to share their thoughts as human beings about the two topics that are affecting my life so much. I met gay people who are willing to share information about life and teach me things about the LGBTQ that I had to learn, especially with regards to image, that would also help me in my endeavors to teach about albinism within the community. So it was challenging, I won't lie, but I also learned a lot from all of it. I'm very grateful for all of it. It has made me stronger. It has made me able to, you know, walk in a room and see the dynamics and teach people from different walks of life about being gay and living with albinism. When I meet a lot of people through Pride Month who are either lesbian and transgender, and I've facilitated or at least helped with some of my friends who are also going through processes. You know, when you discover that you're transgender, it's way beyond the gay agenda now. It is trying to evolve into someone new. And that was also something very personal and very liberating and just filled with education for me. I learned so much. I was very happy to be part of both these communities.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, I know that you are from Daveyton, and that is a township in South Africa. And
yes,
essentially, there are certain stereotypes that hover over townships. And I want us to make mention of these, because these are things that need to be broken down from the fundamental crux. And I'm going to ask Tokozani, if you could just give us what are the fundamental stereotypes that are truly the fence around people uniting and standing as one. And I know that you are speaking for Daveyton, but I believe that this will aid a great deal of the African continent at large.
Yeah. Well, with regards to albinism, we're still facing this hurdle. I see it as a hurdle, because I also work for the South African Social Security Agency, and I see how people living with albinism are affected by the systems that be. It's an ongoing study. It's an ongoing challenge. There's a lot going on in the background. But then what I want you to take from this is that as people living with albinism growing up in a township, we are still facing the elephant in the room. And by that I mean, we have a lot of people that are so desperately trying to prove to people living with albinism that you are part of us, that they don't see how their method in doing that can be discriminatory. So you'd be making me feel, oh no, Tokozani, you are part of us. I have someone like you in my family. I have, you know, all these things is good. Humanize us. But also take note that we our challenges go beyond that. We're still trying to get our way into certain industries. We're still trying to fight for a particular amount of acceptance, but it's not the kind of acceptance that everybody is is thinking that we want. We already understand the fact that we're human. We don't want to make references to our apartheid regime as to how people treat us, because you know when you go into a shop and you are black, and then they're going to be, oh, you know what, you're just like me, I have that at home, so I can't discriminate against you. It's what they do to people living with albinism. Oh, you know, people with albinism are, ah, my aunt has albinism, you know, my friend down the street has it, so me and you people, we're the same, we're the same. And no one would actually see the discrimination that are in those statements. So we're working very hard to change those. We're working very hard to teach communities that, you know what, if I'm human, you don't have to highlight my humanity. Mm. Just show it in action. Mm. Be with me. Live with me. Breathe with me. You know, don't put it in words, so that you make me feel that you understand it in words. Actions speak much louder, you know? If you're going to love me, hug me, you know?
Mm.
Show it. That's what you want. And it's the same struggle that people in the LGBTQ are facing at the moment, because a lot of people are still struggling to come out because of religion, because of tradition, because of cultures, that you find so many are discreet. They'll meet at Sowazani. They'll say, you know what, I want to be in a relationship with you, but I don't want it to be known. But with someone living with albinism, it's hard to have relationships in secrecy, because our condition is very physical. It's very it's very out there. It's open. So you there are challenges that are there. There are fundamental changes that need to be done. But then what I want, the hope that I want to give to people is that one step at a time. I know it's been the saying for decades now, but we need participation. We need to do this together. It can't be a gay Towazani trying to change the whole scape. But if I have people backing me, people working with me, people who are also participating in this change, then we're going to get there. We're going to find gay men who say, you know what, I'm not going to get into relationships for my family. I'm going to get into relationships that are for me, that are for my happiness, that are to build me and my confidence and my life. We're not going to get people who get into a relationship for religious reasons anymore. We're going to get people who are purely in relationships because of purpose, because of love, because of truth.
Mm.
Because living your truth is incredibly important now. Especially in the age that we're in.
Sure. What a beautifully well put together response. Thank you so much for that, Towazani. I want to rope in Marvelyn, if possible. You mentioned a stat that was quite alarming, that 1 in 17,000 people in the UK could be found to be a person with albinism. And I want to sort of understand the challenges that you encounter with such a disposition.
So I done my educational institute in the UK, and it was challenging in school for me because of the low vision impairment. Even though I received accommodations, like I had extra time in my exams, they provided enlarged prints for me. But the thing about it was, I didn't like the big papers per se. I didn't like how it was making my back heavy and all sorts. I didn't like that, you know. So when I came down to my exams, I just told my teachers, I just don't like the enlargements. I don't mind the font to be big, but I just don't like the big A3 paper. It was too big. My challenges with that, it was where I was... I struggled with the teacher's handwriting, and also the type of pens that was used for me would be like the red pens or the green pens. It was very hard for me to see the board. So I would tell the teachers in school that, can you use a particular color for me? It's just that, it's just to help me to see better, even though like I can't be corrected because of the lack of pigmentation in my eyes. With that said, I did get the support You know, I also had training with the Royal Institution of the Blind, where they trained me with walking outside when I was in school as well. I had these people come into my secondary school, and I didn't know about albinism until I was 12 years old. I wasn't educated by my family, so I got to know about my condition through these teachers and special needs people that came in. They told me about albinism and, you know, what my struggle was likely to be in the edit, you know, with my condition. So having said that, I learned to embrace my condition, you know, just be me. And I struggled with my Black identity crisis. I am Black with albinism, so the identity crisis. And I will go back to what that young lady said about pride month, because I, as a part of advocacy, I want to reach the LGBTQ community if you are a person with albinism. And I'm glad that I'm here today to hear your story, because I'm also a podcast host. I do Albinism Talk with Marvelyn. So what I do is I meet people with albinism to hear their stories and to share their experiences with me. So with that said as well, with albinism in the UK, we do face discrimination here. We do. We face, you know, where people stare at us. The name calling, the bullying is definitely evident in the UK. If you are a person with albinism, bullying comes in different shape or form. It does. So some people could say, "Oh, they're joking," but they're not joking. So they're doing it in malicious intent at your own expenses. And for me, I experienced that firsthand with some friends and some family members, where I experienced where they would make fun of my glasses, they would make fun of my shaky eyes. I have nystagmus, so I experienced that, and they would turn around and say, "Oh, they're joking," but it's not a joke to me, because I'm the one that's getting the brunt of it. And for me, now I'm at a place in my life where it took some years, it took some time of healing, and I had to learn to love the skin I'm in, because for one, I was born to stand out, and I use my albinism to inspire me. I don't use it to gain sympathy. I use it to empower me, and I want to be that empowerment to my AB community. I just want to say that, you know, my people and my community, I find them very inspiring to know that there's people out there like me, so I'm not alone. So I'm so grateful that, you know, albinism is such a cause that needs to bring more visibility, and it's not so exposed in the UK either. It's like that lady said about mainstream. Yes, I can actually agree with that, because, you know, we have all these other awarenesses, like cancer awareness, we have mental health awareness, we have HIV awareness, but albinism, yeah, it's there, but it's not visible enough.
Wow, thank you so much for that, Marvelyn. We wrap up the conversation with our guests, and we're chatting all things albinism awareness. So Abongile, I want to rope you into the conversation. You have quite an interesting background from various places and spaces, and I want to understand your particular challenges and essentially what led you to the place and space of advocacy in your journey.
That's a really good question. Challenges. I mean, you know, Marvelyn, the challenges that she's brought up in school, I think everybody with albinism can really resonate with those issues around seeing in class, visual impairment, not short-sighted, low vision, and just experiencing people in a school and a class. Mine, interestingly, you know, Marvelyn spoke of the provisions that she was made and how she really disliked them. For me, I had to actually advocate for that in school. I knew about albinism since I was a kid. My mom taught me. She didn't directly give me a manual, but I basically knew what my requirements or what my needs were, and we would go to the dermatologist and the ophthalmologist and blah, blah. But what then happened was, in primary school, I realized that I was struggling with vision. So we had a carpet, so I would go and sit in the carpet. And it was just a thing that Abungile will get up and she'll just go sit on the carpet. But it was also a thing because we had a carpet and anybody could sit at the desk or on the carpet. So, and then I think from a really young age, I paved my way to this position without deliberately knowing it. And this is how I mean. I was the smartest kid in the class since grade 2 or 3 in primary school. And my best friend and I would switch positions from grade 6 to 7. You know, I'd be first, she'd be second, I'd be second, she'd be first. And while I was that, you know, I was always getting leadership positions. I was really big on just having a voice and advocating and participating as a leader, as a youthful young leader with opinions. And so that continued in high school. And in high school particularly was when I had to ask my teachers deliberately to give me a certain font on a certain page color. And, you know, usually it would be the normal pages and A4. Then I wanted, then they just needed to fit things. Otherwise, I had a nice manual for a 3-page worksheet. So I got A3 papers. And I took that with a pinch of salt. You know, I'd make a joke that everybody in the class needs their own colored paper. The one time my teacher came in and he didn't convert all the exam papers. He only did 3 and then he got fed up and came to class and then he said, yeah, you can do the rest yourself. And it was a paper, it was a test. And I said, no, sir, I won't. I will not do the rest for myself. This is something I need and I need to write an exam like everybody else. And the whole class stopped their exam and they all stopped. And they said, we're not going to continue writing the exam until you give Abungile the pages and the things that she needs so she can write like the rest of us. So it was that atmosphere. And in high school, I had a teacher who was very aware of albinism. And he was like my guardian angel in high school. And, you know, he'd watch over me like, where's your cap, Abungile? You need a bag. You need one you can pull because your books are too heavy. And that's support. And so when it came time to really voice out something, I was well versed in voicing it out. You know, I was in debate, I was in public speaking. So it was easy for me to take charge of something and run with it. And as I grew older, I realized, and I mean, you figure this out as you're young, you know, because we're youth and we're trying to figure out what we do with our lives. And a lot of people would say to me, what are you doing now? And I don't have a 9-to-5 job. And people make you feel bad for not working properly. Like they don't think you being an activist and you doing really high impactful work for 3 months and then not doing anything is work. So I recently realized that actually that has been my work. My work has been consulting for the majority of my working life after varsity. And then I just owned that and I realized, okay, this is what I do. I'm an expert in impairment and mainstreaming marginalized people, youth and women. And albinism is my way and my tunnel and channel through that discussion. And I'm completely satisfied with that and knowing that in whatever space I will go into, that is what I will champion. I will champion inclusion and I will mainstream people who have felt they have been forgotten.
That brings us to the end of the show. Remember, you can send through your messages to continue the conversation via social media. On Twitter, we are at Channel Africa One, and the Facebook page for the show is The Albinism Report. And myself, MS_NDIKUMANA on all social media platforms. From me to you, it's been an absolute blessing. Until we meet again next week, goodbye, Africa.